Sloppy Spoilers with your host, DT2. Hello and welcome to Sloppy Spoilers. My name is David Taylor II. You know me as DT2 Comics Chat. Tonight we're going to be talking about Picard, the CBS All Access only show, sometimes. And Star Trek Picard is so much to say, so we're going to jump right in. I want to welcome my co-host. Welcome to David Nemesis Howard.
Hey, everyone. And on this auspicious day, I just want to say for the discounted price of $20 million, HBO Max, I will give you the Nemesis cut of any movie you want.
It'll probably be better than most films, I will.
There's a niche market for you.
Oh, my goodness. That's a whole nother pot. Welcome to Steve Shade Wing Sellers.
Hi, I'm glad to beam aboard and look at Gene Luck Pickard, or Jake Luck Pickard, as I'm calling him now. Happy to be aboard.
And welcome to Jeff, Dr. Fate Bracey.
Okay, not only am I wearing my COVID gloves and mask to protect me from Star Trek Picard, but I've erected a level 3 force field around it. Let's hope the containment holds.
That's not going to help, my friend. The stench will take that force field down. All right. For those of you that didn't quite understand our previous allusion, what Nemesis was talking about, they have officially announced the release of the Zack Snyder cut of the Justice League film, which has kind of become like a cult mythological thing. It's kind of become its own thing. It's taken on a life of its own through the desire for it to be released. A lot of people didn't believe it was real. It's kind of like the Bigfoot of superhero movies. So they just announced it, or Zack Snyder just kind of teased and then announced and then confirmed that it's going to be released next year on HBO. So I don't know. We'll probably talk about that during the podcast, but that's what we were talking about. That's what we were laughing at. That's what Nemesis meant, because this is just a whole thing surrounding it. So we'll talk about the power of fandom going in many different directions, because it's really manifested in these last years. And that's kind of at the heart of Star Trek Picard, because by their own admission, and there's an article on StarTrek.com that you can read, and Doomcock did an excellent video, by their own admission, their desire was to humiliate Picard and to destroy Star Trek as we knew it. It was on purpose, and they did it line by line, and it's supposed to be some type of attempt at shooting down capitalism, putting a bad spotlight on imperialism, talking about privilege, male privilege, white male privilege, Earth-Terran privilege, every kind of privilege that there is, and using Jean-Luc Picard as kind of the scapegoat, as kind of the pinata, as kind of the crash test dummy to dump all that vitriol on. And they succeeded, but they did not succeed in making a good Star Trek anything, and that's what we're going to talk about.
So, yeah, I'd like to add a little, just a really short thing. I mean, it seems to me like Star Trek is like the worst franchise to take that kind of approach to, considering that there isn't even a capitalist society. It is a post-scarcity society. They do not use money. So this whole idea of privilege even being a thing in this world, I mean, okay, yeah, maybe by rank, but in virtually every other respect, there really isn't any. So, I mean, just from the beginning, they've completely failed with this.
Oh, no, they've succeeded. They were so anti-capitalist, they managed to make this show not make any money.
Yeah. That is true.
Now,
thank you, everybody. That's the podcast. Good night.
Yeah, thank you. Good night. So, keying in off of that idea, we're going to roll into a little bit more in-depth examination of all the things I just said. And we're going to start with the idea of what Steve said, which I think is really, really, really on point. And that is that out of all the franchises you would want to use as this type of vehicle, why would you pick Star Trek? For those of you, I mean, Star Trek fans, you either are one or you aren't. There's not really a lot of middle ground. And if you are one, it just depends on what level you take it to. But even if you are a just, you know, really kind of casual Star Trek fan, you know that the whole idea behind Star Trek was that mankind had evolved to get past the problems that plague us in every generation, specifically because we discovered we weren't alone in the universe. And because of that first contact with the Vulcans, it motivated us to get rid of poverty, hunger, and a war on Earth, and eventually money, and so many of the things that bring out the worst of us as humans. And we turned our eyes towards exploration of the stars to see what else was out there. That's the whole idea of the show in a nutshell. But Star Trek Picard, in every way possible, takes us backwards into hatred, paranoia, checking of privilege, making fun of older people. Ageism was on purpose. If you felt the ageism, it's there on purpose. So I want to hear from the panel on just your general thoughts about why did they try to do the opposite of everything that Star Trek is about. Go ahead. Let's start with Steve, because, again, I really like what you said there.
Yeah. The thing with Star Trek has always been that it's a utopian society, you know, and Roddenberry was not like exactly a right leaning guy. He was very, you know, progressive, especially for the 1960s. So, you know, you have a lot of these viewpoints, you know, that he brought in, you know, trying to imagine the world that was better than the time that he lived in. And so you had a lot of these ideas. And it just seems to me like, you know, with Picard, what they're trying to do is, you know, essentially tear down Roddenberry and his vision. We know that there are a lot of people that there's a real hatred out there from some people towards Roddenberry, you know, because he was a man of his time. And there seems like they're taking a lot of that and carrying it to create, tearing down what he built as well. And I just find it absolutely mystifying. I mean, I do not get this at all, because, I mean, why would you, you know, tear down something that ostensibly is trying to be in some respects, you know, what you want? I mean, this is a society where capitalism is in the thing of the past. You know, replicators have made, you know, that obsolete and things like this. So it just seems like what they're trying to do is they're trying to take it away from being a commentary on the future or any of that, and trying to make a commentary on this nightmare they think the present is. And in the process, you know, trying to take Roddenberry and his vision under the mud. I find it very unfortunate.
Now, what you said right there, the nightmare that the world now is, again, just directly backwards from everything that's been established in the story world. Go ahead, Bracey. Let me hear your thoughts.
I couldn't agree with him more. I mean, like, wow. If you watch anything, especially with Roddenberry's fingerprints on it, everything from Star Trek to The Next Generation, to even shows he would do, such as Earth Final Conflict or Earth 2, or, you know, just any number of things that were germinated from, you know, the seeds of his ideas that continued on past his demise. Roddenberry was always about that hopeful future. And we have just an unimaginable plethora of the dystopian future. But Roddenberry didn't go that way. He gave us the hopeful future. As you said, we have moved past the need for the capitalism. Mankind works together. They've discovered there's a larger world beyond the confines of our tiny little planet. And there's conflict to be had out there. But within ourselves and in the greater Federation, there was an agreement to better themselves. Picard even says that at one time to an alien they're meeting. And he says, you know, we don't have any money. We work to better ourselves. That's our whole point. And you can see there's this, it kind of reminds me of the Japanese ideal of things, especially like the kind of the medieval period forward, where I can see people, everything becomes sort of an art form, an expression of self, a way to improve the world around you. And that's sort of what the Federation became. And to see that drug through the mud is beyond disheartening for me. It's just kind of despicable. It's like, you know, it's like we're not even allowed to have good things anymore. We're not allowed to have heroes. We're not allowed to have hope. Everything has to be deconstructed because, as Steve put it so elegantly already, these people who are doing these sorts of things seem to think the world right now is a nightmare via their perspective, which is very funny coming from the first world. you think it's a nightmare, go live in Venezuela for a little while. But, this show should be about the positivity. We definitely could use something like that with all the negativity going around out there. So thank God we have something like the Orville to kind of keep the spirit of Star Trek alive.
Very much so.
Yeah, that's true. The Orville is the true successor to TNG, better than anything else we've seen. Star Trek has been around long enough now for us to have different eras. Mm-hmm. So we had Roddenberry Trek, which bled into Berman Trek. And then we have a combination now of Abrams Trek and what's his name?
Kurtzman.
Kurtzman Trek, that's right. Go ahead, Nemesis.
My thoughts really are split along two different lines. One is dealing with the real world, and I'll get to that second. And then the other part is dealing with Star Trek, the mythology, the canon, the story. Star Trek, excuse my language for a second, but really, Star Trek was a leftist, a liberal's wet dream. It was a utopian society,
Right.
I mean, a Starfleet is even based in San Francisco, and that's not by accident, And everything about it was that utopian society, and it's a beautiful utopia. Now, I happen to be more right of center, so I believe that that's not possible because of human nature. That doesn't mean that I wanted the show to be more in line with what I think reality was, because I appreciated the utopian vision, and that's what Star Trek always was. One thing I will say is that I don't think that this has come all of a sudden. I think it's come in dribs and drabs. I think the first sign we saw of the cracks were in Star Trek The Undiscovered Country, where suddenly you had military factions within Starfleet conspiring with the Romulans and the Klingons to continue a war, so it's the first time that you saw a crack in the utopia and you started seeing like a military industrial complex and stuff like that. And they've added elements of this in other, it's been mostly the movies, like Star Trek Nemesis had elements of this. J.J. Abrams' Star Trek went a whole nother level. So we had espionage and spies and secret black box programs and stuff like that. So they've added that into the mythology. That said,
and Deep Space Nine.
Right. Definitely. That said, I don't think, because Star Trek, for me, fandom, has always really been tied into leftist, I'm not going to say ideology, I'm going to say leftist vision of what the perfect world would be. And it's a beautiful vision, to be honest with you. And that's coming from somebody, like I said, I'm more right of center than I am anything. But if it could work out, it is a beautiful vision, what Star Trek promises. And I think that reflected, that Roddenberry's vision reflected the liberal sensibilities of his time. It was the age of Aquarius, the people who wanted to bring on a more perfect society where everybody cooperated. The writers now, they're still leftists, but leftists aren't about age of Aquarius and beautiful societies anymore. They're about rebellion. They're about rebellion against society, about tearing things down and destroying the status quo. That's what it's about now. And you can see that that reality has never been more apparent than in this show. There, I've only watched the first episode, and I get what they're doing, and some of it worked for me, some of it didn't, and we'll talk about that. But I think it's quite apparent that their vision of what is going on in Starfleet and in society is quite a bit different than Roddenberry's vision, and it lines up perfectly with this idea that the left is now not about perfecting humanity and society and achieving a utopia vision. It's about pure revolution, rebellion, tearing things down and destroying the old. And I think that's reflected in this show.
Okay, I'm going to speak to that a little bit. I agree with what you're saying. I don't really slot myself on a political spectrum because I'm more of a truthist. I just want to know what the truth is.
Right.
But I understand what you're saying about the perspective of the show, and I agree. However, I don't have a problem with things like Section 31 because, like you, I don't believe that we could pull something like that off with no side effects, no impact, no counterbalance to it. I agree with that. But it was always there. It's just that when it was in TNG, it was always treated as an anomaly or they were framed as the bad guys. One of my favorite examples, of course, is Pressman with the Pegasus. Mm-hmm. Okay. Pressman was right. The way he went about it was wrong. But his concept was right that we don't need to be lagging behind in technology of any kind, including a phase cloak, because of what our enemies are doing. It's naive of people to assume that just because you want peace and just because you want a science-y exploration type deal doesn't mean everybody does. So, you know, and the same thing was true with Jellicoe. You know, Jellicoe was one of my favorite characters. Same thing was true with Shelby, the best of both worlds. These were people that brought in that were written to show that the Enterprise, though loving and warm, was kind of lazy and didn't really run a tight ship for the flagship like they should have. And if something were to catch them unawares, they might not be able to get around it because Jean-Luc was so relaxed about certain protocols. So I agree that was in dribs or drabs, but it was always there. Mm-hmm. But now, like you said, this generation and this time, it's come to the forefront, and it's come to the forefront with the idea that tearing things down and getting rid of the old. And I keep telling people the mantra is get rid of the past, kill it if you have to. That's the mantra of this new generation. That's what they believe. So moving on into what happens in the show opens with a shot of the Enterprise, and then we see Picard playing cards with Data. So let's examine that whole thing, because there's a lot that happens right in that whole opening scene. I'll just give a few brief comments. The first thing that you notice is how they look. And I have to say, just like Indiana Jones, this was not a character that I wanted to see at this stage of life. I have great respect for Sir Patrick Stewart. His body of work speaks for itself. He's a phenomenal actor. I love Jean-Luc Picard like so many people do, but I did not want to see him aging to the point of being feeble or looking like he's struggling or just at this stage of life. I just, you know, it's not really something I wanted to see. And Brent Spiner's makeup on Data, I guess they did the best they could, and some of that is CGI. But to me, it just felt like, you know, like, why? I mean, we know why, because they wanted to humiliate him, but I'm like, so I didn't get that. And then also, it sets a tone. It seems that this show is trying to convince us that Picard and Data had a relationship that they never really had on TNG, or we never saw it. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be a kind of a strong emphasis. So you guys tell me what you think about that opening scene. Start with Bracey.
Now, the one thing I did like about the opening scene is it actually calls back to the very last episode of TNG, where for the first time ever, Picard sits in on the officer's poker table. And I thought that was kind of a nice little tie-in there. Something that he had never done until the very end of the series, and he started to get a little bit more informal with his men. Even though you said he ran a somewhat informal ship, Picard was known for keeping a professional distance. Now, I don't see it, especially in the context of the movies that followed, even with him becoming a little bit more integrated with his officers, I don't see him basically becoming buddy-buddy with anybody. If you look at the films that followed, so the scene of him, or the several scenes of him in this show, and particularly this, how he states, like, you know, Captain, you know, you're stalling. He's like, you know, I don't want the game to end. That he clearly wants to live in this dream world where he's still on the ship and Data's still alive. I don't think Captain Picard would feel that way. You know, he's obviously would regret any member of his crew their demise, but he would not have this weird sort of a bromancy longing to see them again, not to the point where he's been dreaming about him for 30 years. That just really, really struck me as odd. It was a scene that tried to be endearing, and there was like a moment where he's, you know, Picard's using his little deductive reasoning to figure out the Data, an android who can't have a tell, actually does have a tell. And both these actors are very, very good at getting right back into these characters that they haven't portrayed in so very long. But at the same time, even though there are these little things that kind of pull at my nostalgia, my heartstrings for these characters and the Next Generation, overall, it just doesn't work for me. It comes across feeling forced and false.
Those are really good points. The Jean-Luc that we know would have continued to explore because he was an archaeologist and a geologist. And if he couldn't do it physically, he would have done it virtually on a holodeck.
Absolutely.
He wouldn't be sitting around trying to remember his glory days, that's for sure. That was not his style. Go ahead, Nemesis.
See, I guess this is where I'm going to really depart from everybody else, because I really got this scene in particular and Picard in this episode, but I came to it from a very different perspective. I think that this TV series draws a lot on the movie, specifically going from Star Trek Contact, which was First Contact, forward with the Next Generation movies. And they established, and I think there were three movies that encompass that arc, this very different relationship between Picard and Data, where he looked at him almost like a son. At least that was my reading of it. And then when Data, and Picard was also very militaristic, you know, after his encounters with the Borg and everything, he became much more of a military commander in those movies. And when Data sacrificed himself for Picard, my reading of this whole scene was that Picard is like many military commanders I know, that once they're out of command, they don't know what to do with themselves. They miss the ease of command and that lifestyle. That is what they're so used to. And then I think he also has survivor's guilt about being, that so many soldiers have when they survive an encounter and somebody they were close to dies. So that's kind of how I read it. Although I do agree with you, Dave, that it was hard to look at Sir Patrick Stewart in this state. You know, even though I understood the scene, and I understood what's going on with Picard, at least from my point of view, it was hard to see because he really comes across to me as an elderly, senile man who has gone to seed. He's well past his prime, and he's deserving of a retirement, a well-deserved retirement. And Picard does, and Patrick Stewart does to a certain extent as well. You know, seeing him as Charles Xavier and Wolverine was a little bit shocking, you know, and it was just as shocking here because he's an elderly man now. I mean, there's no way to beat around the bush. That's just who he is.
Just really quickly, I definitely understand what you're saying, but number one, I want to remind that this is a man that survived being Locutus.
Right.
Remember how many people he killed when he was Locutus? And somehow he was able to process that. But number two is also that the whole point of Jean-Luc, not Jake, who we meet, Jake Picard, but the whole point of Jean-Luc was that he had a life outside of Starfleet. We saw that in Family, the wine, the geology, the archaeology, the study of history. He had a life, and he had a more well-rounded approach. As opposed to what we discovered about Kirk in Star Trek Wrath of Khan, was that he didn't. Kirk's whole arc is that if he's not being a captain, he's useless. He doesn't know what else to do. He doesn't know how to do anything else. And he met his grown son, and he said, that's the life I could have had.
See, that's why I think that this show draws on the Next Generation movies and not the TV series. Because the very first Next Generation movie cast Picard in a whole different light. You know, when he went into the Nexus, with Kirk. You know, Picard had all sorts of regrets about being in Starfleet and not having a family and everything else going on. So I think that this is the next generation, or it's the movie Picard, not necessarily the TV series Picard. Does that make sense?
Okay, yeah, I see your point a lot better because they are definitely two separate characters. So, yeah, I see your point. Okay, go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I'm actually going to jump a little bit on what Nemesis is saying. And I'm also going to jump a little bit off of what I remember from a Red Letter Media discussion of this. And I think this point needs to be kept in mind here, which is that they pointed out that a lot of the way they approach Picard as a show seems to be from the point of view of, let's take what people, you know, what's in the public consciousness about the next generation and then just cram it in there. You know, so you see Data in the poker table, you see, you know, Captain Picard with, you know, the Earl Grey tea hot, you know, all these sorts of things that are designed to, you know, remind you that, yeah, you know, we read this show, we watched the show too, but then they miss a lot of other details. If you had watched the show closely, it wouldn't have been in there. And some of those points we'll talk a little bit about later probably, but this is where a lot of this whole approach is. And the nostalgia, the thing that I really hate about the use of nostalgia when it comes to the show, and I have seen this like on various other things that are woke, which is they like to use the nostalgia to allure people into watching it, give people a false sense of security, and then they hammer the lecturing later. And the way I can definitely see, there's a little bit of this in this episode, but from what I gather, there's going to be a lot more of it, you know, later on. But this whole scene is just there to sort of hit the nostalgia, you know, to bring people back in. Yeah, this is Data the way I remember him. This is Picard the way I remember him. You know, let's go from here. But it is a very false sense of security, and we're going to eventually see that. As far as the scene itself, I'm kind of with Nemesis in the point where he's talking about you know, how Patrick Stewart is really playing these decrepit old characters. The way that he plays Picard is a lot like he plays Xavier, in the sense that, you know, these are two people who did amazing things in the prime of their life and even a little bit older. And now he's playing them as these decrepit, dementia, you know, addled people that are not the people that they were. And even in addition to Jake Picard or not being the character from the movies or the TV show, them all three being kind of different, there's kind of the angle that Patrick Stewart seems really intent on playing these characters as sad sacks who, you know, have lost a lot of who they were. And I don't know how much of that is because it fascinates him on some level, or if he thinks that it reflects himself in some way. But you can definitely see that it's coming into the scene, and it's sad to see. Like, I mean, I can see the logic of it in some respect, but it's just sad to see, and it's not how you want to see your heroes, you know, especially after all this time. But in terms of the scene and the way they play it, I mean, it's not that bad. I kind of like, you know, the whole business about the tell. Okay, that's nice and whatnot, but still, it's just sort of kind of bittersweet because you know that they're using this to soften the blow as they lead into the lectures they want to give you. And it's just kind of eye rolling.
Now, thematically, what you just said is going to play out in large ways. So I want everybody to keep in mind what Steve's talking about, that there's the nostalgia factor to draw you in. And there's concepts that are written like, from people that didn't actually watch the show nor get its themes, but just knew that they were in there. That's gonna magnify as time goes on. The other thing I want to say before we move on is there's something I called in the opening credits, and I'm not gonna fully give it away for those that haven't seen it yet. But in the opening credits, you see it looks like pieces falling out of the sky. It looks like chips of paint or perhaps puzzle pieces falling. And then in the end, some of them coalesce onto Jean-Luc's face. And then that's the end of the opening credits. I called what that was and what they were saying. And so by the time we get to the end of this first season, when what that means becomes a little bit more evident, I'll bring it up then. But I just want to drop it in this first one.
See, when I saw the neuron split and everything in that opening credit scene, my first thought is I flashed back. I was like, oh, this is X-Men Star Trek style. So I thought they were like the mutant gene was coming out or something.
No, as soon as I saw the paint chips, I knew what that was. I'm like, yeah, okay.
Okay.
So, but when we get there, because like I said, I don't want to spoil it at all. Okay, now let's move on to if the show wasn't downhill, when we meet Mary Sue Dodge, oh my goodness. I know people say that that term is overused and it's not always true, but it is not possibly more true in this case because she does not have a personality. I keep trying to tell people, when you see characters in a show and they kind of do what they do, that's a function. That's not a character. A character has strengths and weaknesses. A character has a personality you can describe. A character has something you can describe and not even bring in the physicality, like Luke or Han or Leia or Obi-Wan. You could not mention their physicality and absolutely describe who they are. But Dodge has absolutely none of that. She's not even a fully fleshed out Buffy. She's a Buffy wannabe because she has none of the personality. So she's in her apartment, in her living room, getting cozy with her boyfriend. And all of a sudden, it's the antagonist beam in and they're going after her. They kill him first because, of course, the black guy has to die first. They couldn't miss that trope. And then everything about it now... I thought this before Doomcock said it in the video, so I just want to be sure I'm just not parroting him. Everything about it is nonsensical. Everything about their approach, everything about what they're doing, everything about their supposedly stated goals is nonsensical. If they're trying to get a hold of this girl and they obviously have no problems beaming into where she is, all they had to do was beam her out.
Yes. I was saying that before I saw that video.
Right, or incapacitate her in some way. If you know what she's capable of and you know what she's about to do, if you keep poking at her.
Well, why do you throw a knife at the guy? Well, don't you have disruptors or phasers or anything? Right. Why are you doing this?
Right. That theme is going to be prevalent as well. Backwards technology. But I don't want to jump too far ahead. So yeah, nothing about their approach makes any sense. And I'm like, I'm looking at it and I'm like, how did you expect this to end? You know, what did you think was going to happen? Because you did everything possible to activate her and then she kills you in less than, I would say 45 seconds and you're all out. So it was nonsensical. And once again, like I said, we don't see any hints of a personality. We just see reaction, but we don't see snark. We don't see regret. We don't see hope. We don't see maybe ghosts in the past until a little bit later. But I'm saying if you had to describe this girl and you didn't, and you weren't allowed to describe her physically, there's literally nothing you could say. So it's a different level of a Mary Sue in that she doesn't even have the rounding out of the character thing. So tell me about your thoughts when we first meet Dodge. Start with Nemesis.
Okay, well, first I want to go to the backwards technology. I think the ultimate example of that, and immediately it hit me, was this girl, I guess she's a synthetic. They tried to blackbag her, literally blackbagged her, you know, and expected that to put her unconscious. I was like, you just put a black canvas bag over her head and expect her to go out. I mean, there's not even chloroform or anything. I was like, come on, folks. I mean, what is going on? So that was just completely rang untrue. So right away, it brought a level of stupidity to the scene, especially, and I will have to say this for this show. This is an absolute positive. The show is beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. The special effects, it is beautiful. and they did some special effects with something they put on her face that was over her eyes that looked like a visor. Unbelievable effects, absolutely beautiful. And they ruined it by putting a black canvas bag over her head. So, I was like, what the hell is that all about? You know, I was like, what is that supposed to do? You know, but I think the real problem here, yes, you're right. The character is a complete, you know, there is nothing there. She's a blank slate, and they didn't write on the slate at all. And I think that's the problem. We have nothing. We went directly from this scene with characters we know. We had a sense of nostalgia. We kind of understood, whether we like it or not, we understood what they're doing there. And suddenly we flash forward right into the middle of this intimate scene of two people we've never met. We know nothing about them. And then, bam, the black dude gets killed. She gets a black bag over her head and then goes off and goes Black Widow on everybody, kills everybody, and then runs off. We don't know what's going on. We don't know what activate means. We don't know who these people in the black are. We don't know anything. And it's like, if you wanted to come along and kick me in the nuts and throw me off balance with the show, you couldn't have picked a better way to do it.
Again, you know, I'm thinking about other characters when we meet them in other movies, because we have no reason to care about her. Mm-hmm. But I mean, all her entire arc in this episode, we have no reason to care.
Yeah. Let's contrast it. We recorded our first Stargirl episode yesterday, okay? Right off the beginning, let's say that we didn't know anything about the JSA, but we get introduced to them and they get killed. But everybody who watched that, I showed that to my family, they cared. Why did they care? Because they started it off with Luke Wilson's character talking to them, his emotion, his how much he cared for them, whether we thought it was cheesy or not, was apparent. And so we cared about those characters that died because he cared, and we got 2 minutes of him driving in the car and being worried was enough to establish that for us within the show. We didn't get any of that here.
No, nothing. Go ahead, Bracey.
Yeah, I'm going to start with something that actually tail ends the first scene where they go to Picard's chateau after the dream that just annoyed me. It's such a small thing, but he orders his classic Earl Grey tea, and instead of saying hot, he says decaf. And I'm like, really? We're going to police what we drink now too? Okay. And he only says it that one time, thank God. But any other time he orders the Earl Grey, he's not saying decaf. But like, just the one time got to me. And this is the problem with so much stuff being woke. Even when you aren't looking for it, I'm trying to watch all this media we discuss objectively, it sticks out. You start to suspect anything, even the smallest thing, because they put in so much of this crap. But on to the actual scene we're discussing here. We have two major fight scenes with Dodge versus these agents who will later be revealed as Romulan. Spoilers on that. And it's like you guys said, like, why didn't they transport her out? Why do they put this technology on her and then black bag her when we've already seen things like neural dampers and cortical stimulators? Why couldn't they have just knocked her out with the devices they put on her forehead? No, we've got to do this because we're going to do scary stuff like, oh, it's Guantanamo Bay kind of stuff. We're going to black bag you and do it. It's like, no, that's ridiculous. We already know they've got phasers, but one of them has to throw a knife at the boyfriend instead of just hitting him with a phaser. None of that makes sense other than just like, somebody's going like, well, this will look cool. And if they don't know for sure if she's been activated or not, why not just go ahead and shoot her first, you know, stun her? But no, they get within arm's reach of her, and then she gets activated, and she rapidly kicks their butts. So what will happen in a later episode is, later on in the show, they will engage her at a distance to start with, and we'll go into this more detail, but like, they didn't learn their lesson from this, where she literally killed these guys. I went back and timed it. I believe it is 35 seconds. She takes out all these top-notch assassin agents, and a bunch of them will transport in right next to her and engage her in hand-to-hand combat instead of keeping their flipping distance. You know, when she's the bionic woman, you know, she's punching people through walls and she's throwing them off this and she's making 40-foot jumps. Yeah. So like they didn't learn their lesson from this scene. And it's like you said, the only thing we had about Dodge in this moment to care about is initially she was the damsel in distress. You know, she's small, she's soft, she appears weak. You know, her boyfriend is kind of big and kind of hunky, and he gets taken out with, you know, complete ease. But then she gets activated and she turns into Superwoman. I'm okay with that because we know, we can surmise that she's probably going to be an android before we find out the truth of it. But as a character, she has nothing of value yet. Once again, they're trying to draw on the nostalgia that, you know, Data has continued on in some way through this girl. And it just, once again, it's going to play out in a later scene. But what they do with her beyond this makes this whole building up to this character completely worthless, if you ask me. And so you, when what happens later happens, you're like, I don't even really care all that much. And even if I was starting to care, it's, I've got nothing to go on. And the last thing I'll say about this is, as the actress, I don't know if it's her or if it's the script, but this scene and the scenes, the subsequent scenes with her, I just don't like the acting. I can feel her acting, and it, you know, Patrick Stewart comes across as very natural. His Romulan housekeepers, they come across as very natural. The reporter, you know, these all seem like real people interacting with each other. But whenever I see Dodge on screen, I can just feel her acting at me, and I can't stand that.
Remember, dude, we're writers. We can see the code. We are Neo. Go ahead, Steve.
Can't stop the signal. I think that you've pretty much have covered most of it. This scene was so dumb for a lot of reasons. Like even before, you know, I'm seeing other people comment on this. It's like, yeah, they could have beamed her out. They could have stunned her. Like, why didn't you use this? You have phasers. Why didn't you stun her? Why are you throwing knives at her? At the boyfriend. I mean, it's why are you throwing a black bag on him? On her. It just, everything about this, nothing seemed like they thought about it at all. It just seemed like they're, in a sense, doing what J.J. Abrams is well known for, which is, you know, let's have things move really fast so nobody thinks about what's going on. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely a fair amount of that with this scene. You know, you're not thinking about who this character is. You're not thinking about, you know, how the scene and the way things are going, you know, doesn't add up. You're not thinking about how the mystery doesn't add up. All you're seeing is, oh, gee, it's really cool that this girl is beating the crap out of all these dudes. Who is she? It just doesn't work. And I will say that as far as the Dodge character, I come away thinking she's basically River Tam, except with a personality lobotomy. like she's apparently an escaped experiment of some kind, you know, with these guys that, you know, from the government or whoever that are after her. You know, she has all these special abilities and, you know, and she can beat up these guys five times her size, you know, for reasons that are not explained. But the difference is that River Tam actually had a personality. You cared about her, you know, because she was quirky and she had, you know, and she loved her brother. And, you know, she had this relationship with that were established with the other crewmates, and you gradually got to know her and you cared about her. With Dodge, I have no idea who she is. I don't care who she is. And some of it could be the acting, but a lot of it's just the writing. She's not being given anything to work with, even if, you know, the acting, you know, was better than we're seeing. It's just a waste. I mean, it's not a very good scene at all.
Okay, now I've got a few things to say. I'll go through them briefly. The first thing I want to say is, as you guys are talking, I'm reviewing in my mind the introduction of certain other characters. You brought up River Tam. So when we first meet River, we see right away, even by dialogue, even without dialogue, that she's been traumatized. And that's one of the central core elements of her arc. Pepper Potts, when we meet her, we see that she has an unspoken love for Tony because Tony is messy and she's basically his cleanup person. And she loves him on a variety of levels. When we meet Natasha, we know there's more to her, even though we see her very, very briefly. Tony's like, you know, I want one. There's more to her. There's some mystery to Natasha. We know that there's many layers there that develop later in later movies. So none of that is present here, whether it's the actress or the writing or the directing or the combination of the three. That's the first thing. The second thing I want to say is I want to throw this principle out there for all the writers listening, and that is that one of the ways to litmus test your story is to see if you can lift your main character out of it and it's still the same story. You can lift Jean-Luc out of this story and it actually would be a better story. This is bad, and this is bad Trek. If we were meeting a story about a retired soldier who was in his senior years, who was suffering from PTSD and regretting some of his more notable decisions, and he meets the daughter of one of his late friends that he didn't know that he had, everything about that is more interesting automatically.
Yeah. Imagine if it was Mackenzie Calhoun, for example.
Oh, yes.
Oh, you know what I was thinking? You say, like, lift this out and put in an old soldier. I mean, like, go, you know, this would make an excellent, like, Blade Runner TV show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, that's what I'm saying. So the premise and the setup and the concepts themselves are not actually bad. It's just that Star Trek and Picard as a character and the way they framed all this is the wrong approach. You can lift Jake Picard out of this, replace him with almost any other character. You could replace him with Riker, even, and it's the same story.
Yeah.
See, this story was written specifically to bash Picard. That's the thing.
I think you want to have a perfect example of, I think that Steve is right. I think it's a combination of the actress and the role, because the actress later on gave me a really creepy vibe at certain times, almost a stalkery vibe at the end of the episode. It was really weird. I was disconcerted. If you want to contrast this performance with a performance that almost hits the tone perfectly, because it gave us an unknown actress at the time, and it gave us a brand new character that we didn't know anything about, and her in her first, I would say, two shots in this film, we automatically knew who this character was. We wanted to see more and learn more about her, and we loved her. It's Carrie Fisher as Princess Leia in Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Very well said. Okay, so now let's move on to the next scene, because it's just getting worse. Let me say that this reporter is the Gail King of Starfleet, asking about Colby's rape accusation after he was dead.
Mm-hmm.
That's about how sensitive this reporter woman is. They said specifically, Jean-Luc said, we're not going to talk about Mars, and we're not going to talk about me leaving Starfleet. We're not going to talk about that. Or we're not going to talk about everything that happened around my decision. We can talk about Mars, but not my decision to leave Starfleet. So, of course, she goes there. And I'm saying to myself, clearly, you know, journalists haven't changed and people haven't learned anything, because they're going to ambush you on air. Right. So, you know, but it just really made me mad, because people in his camp should have been smarter enough to know that this was going to happen. And she should have been more respectful. You know, it's just like everybody got really mad at Gail for bringing up that stuff about Colby, and this man just died in a copter crash and his daughter died. And you coming up with that? That's what, this made me feel like. And this also sets up so many plot points, and I want to throw something else out here in terms of writing. Gary at Nerdrotic said it, but I thought it as well. And that is that it's like they took all the ideas and said, let's go with all of them. So we have a retired Jean-Luc looking back on his life and the impact of his decisions. We have a rebellion, an unexplained rebellion by the synthetics. We have the atmosphere of Mars being ignited and still burning to this day. And the ecological fallout of that would be enormous. We have the destruction of the Federation's shipyard. We have the banning of synthetic life forms and the fallout from that. All of that, and I'm saying to myself, any one of those would have been good enough to be a plot thread to follow, and you could have taken actually several seasons to develop all that, but just bam, 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 all this stuff happens. And I'm like, So anyway, give me your thoughts on The Interview, start with Nemesis.
Okay, lots of different thoughts on this one. First of all, I'm with you. This scene made me angry, but I thought it was a very successful scene in that for the one of the only times in this whole episode, I saw the old Picard here when he finally lost his temper and got angry and stood up for himself against the reporter. I enjoyed that. That said, everything else about it, as far as the history, confused the hell out of me because I don't know what timeline in Star Trek are we on, because they're talking about the Romulan supernova. That happened in J.J. Abrams' Star Trek, and then they kind of folded that into the normal Star Trek timeline, but we've got a whole problem with time travel and everything going on. So I'm really, at this point when I was watching this, I'm trying to put together chronologically how all of this fits together, and none of it works. And I'm still confused, to be honest with you. I don't know how any of this chronologically fits together, because if they're basing this off the movies, then the Romulan supernova happened when Kirk was still a new captain in Starfleet, which would have been a long time before this, you know, but they're making it out sound like it happened under, you know, sometime when Picard was in Starfleet. And then that whole thing with Romulan immigration and everything, it's like you said, everything was thrown in there, and it seems like they took stuff chronologically from all parts of different Star Trek and just threw it all in together, and none of it fits a timeline. And that may be fine for people that just want to watch a show and not think about it, but for a Trekkie like me, who likes to fit everything in perspective and know exactly how many years passed between this event and that event, I'm completely confused. It really lost me. I did like the reporter getting yelled at, though, and that probably shows what I feel about reporters as a general rule, though. So.
I was waiting for, like, the Commander Shepard moment. I'm tired of your disingenuous assertions.
Yeah, exactly.
Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah. Well, in addition to that, this was not my favorite scene. I really enjoyed it. But I will say that from the starting point that I'm going to jump off a little bit on what Nemesis said on the previous scene, which is, can you imagine how much better this would have been if this was a Blade Runner show instead of a Star Trek show, where that some was, of this stuff would actually Jeff. Would have fit? Or I'm sorry, Jeff.
That's fine.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I knew it was one of you. If this had been a Blade Runner story, this whole business of the synthetics on Mars having a rebellion and all this, that might have been interesting. You know, we could find out in the mysteries of why they were doing that. We go to Mars and we explore that. That would have been fine. But putting this in the context of Star Trek, which is the utopian future, and then basically showing that how all of Captain Picard's work to get synthetics recognized as, you know, legitimate life forms, shut down, thrown down the drain in 1 minute of this show. I'm like, really? You know, because I was actually looking back at Measure of a Man, which I thought did a really great job of, you know, presenting the arguments about, you know, are androids sentient? You know, are they intelligent? Are they deserving, you know, of rights? You know, where do rights begin? You know, these kinds of questions that, you know, were very fascinating. And that could have also have made an interesting, you know, episode for the show. But instead, it's just, you know, throwing down all the progress, you know, that Picard had made with Data for the sake of advancing this plot, and, you know, humiliating Picard because we have to tear down Picard's accomplishments, and basically, you know, shoving the ideals of the Federation down the drain also in one moment, because, you know, we again, more humiliating of Picard, more tearing down of what Roddenberry built. And I just thought that all of this kind of encapsulated everything that was wrong with that. And it's just one of those things where it's just one of those scenes where if you're a longtime Star Trek fan, you know, it's disheartening. And honestly, this is kind of the point where where if Q were judging humanity at that moment, I think he would come down and say, "You're a dangerously savage child race, and I'm going to end all of humanity." it's really that bad. It's that much of a regression. But even beyond that, I honestly thought that, you know, Picard had been way too patient with this reporter. And I was just sort of wondering, okay, you can just say no comment. That's perfectly a reasonable answer to some of these questions. You know, stop trying to humor her, put this woman in her place. It was satisfying when he finally got there, but I think it took too long. And just listening to some of the exposition was just frustrating, especially in, like, if you enjoy the mythos and you enjoy the more utopian vision. This is just kind of like where my conception of Star Trek vastly departs from what this show is trying to do.
Totally, totally correct. And I agree. Go ahead, Bracey.
All right, I'm going to answer this in three parts. Clarification, what I didn't like and what I did like. Clarification is for Nemesis and those like him. Here's how the timeline works. Even though it occurred in the movies, what we have is Spock from the Next Generation teleporting into the Kelvin timeline, because this is Ambassador Spock. So the Romulan system going Nova actually happened at some point beyond the Next Generation that we had already seen, because we had Spock as the ambassador who went on this mission. So that'll help you there. And Nero also got sucked into that black hole, which transported him over to the Kelvin timeline. So he's actually from the Next Generation timeline as well.
Okay. So we have two different timelines.
Yes. We have, in Star Trek, we have, I guess we've got three timelines going now. But I'm not going to get into that, because that's a whole pod right there.
Okay.
So anyway, on to the stuff I didn't like. Now, as we've established with the trial of Data, they established that Data was not property, that he was a recognized sentient life form and citizen of the Federation. So what gives the Federation the right to ban synthetics, even if they rebel against the Federation? We don't just go and commit genocide on the Romulans or the Klingons or anybody else who gets in our face. No, you might go to war with them, but you don't genocide them. And right off the get-go, I'm like, this reporter lady seems to have no problem with not just one genocide, but two when you get right down to it. If they're talking about banning all synthetic life, then they have just genocided them as a race. Next, she's of the opinion like, well, you know, Romulans suck, so what's wrong with us letting the Romulans all die? And, of course, Red Letter Media brilliantly pointed out a very obvious fact to anybody who's a Trek fan. You know, the Romulan Star Empire is big. It's a warp technology empire. They got lots of planets, lots of ships. You know what happens? Like the original capital of the United States, got burned down at one point. They're like, well, we'll just set up the Capitol House over here. You know, just because the home planet goes to hell doesn't mean like the Romulan Star Empire goes to hell. You still have more than enough people in this broad expanse of space, plenty of spaceships to get people off the planet. It's nice if the Federation could pitch in, but you know, they were the Romulan Star Empire. They should have been able to take care of themselves. So that whole plot point doesn't make any sense at all either. So that's a lot of stuff I didn't like. I didn't like, you know, this whole lady smirky attitude, but that's the point of the scene. You want to put Picard on his back foot, and it's very satisfying. This is what I did like, to see the old captain rise up, to see him put her in his place. And I don't know if they realized it. I don't know if they realized it, but what they did, because like you point out, DT, there is this philosophy of like, kill the past if you have to, like get rid of the old, we're bringing in the new, forget the old stuff. And Picard succinctly makes this point that you don't know your history. That, like, I'm the old fuddy-duddy, and I'm hanging on to the history and the glory days and all this. Like, you don't know the history. And they have literally forgotten the history to the point that they've forgotten the reason that we remember history is so that we don't repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird that it's almost this weird tongue-in-cheek thing that even though this is going to be a very SJW, very progressive, you know, very all this and that kind of ideology show, that there's this very cheeky sort of moment where, like, it's almost like he's looking right out at us like, yeah, we're going to admit, like, we're kind of making fun of ourselves a little bit, or very unintentionally pointing out our own flaws as well, for those who are really invested in this sort of idea. Versus those of us who are, you know, a little bit older and remember some of these things that they seem to have forgotten or just willingly not paid attention to anymore.
Yeah, you know, it was I think maybe the second most focused scene to let you know what the show was going to be about. But that takes me to the next scene, which is pretty much the pinnacle of everything that's wrong with this show. And as soon as I saw this next scene, I was like, oh, okay. I just started to a little bit mentally and emotionally disconnect because I knew what was coming as soon as I saw this scene. The scene I'm referring to is when Dodge meets Picard. Now, I mean literally every line, every beat, every frame. And I agree with what Nemesis said. This show is visually beautiful. It's actually breathtaking. Mm-hmm. It's too bad that it just stops there.
I mean, it looks like a movie.
Yeah. But I mean, it's visually sculpted very, very well.
Gorgeous.
And the richness of the angles and the colors draw you in. Yeah. But there's nothing to draw you into. But when I saw this scene, I was like, okay, I knew it was over. So our introduction to Dodge gives us the Mary Sue frame. We might have been able to get past that if there was some redemption later. And mm-hmm. the interview scene shows us, you know, what they're going to do to Picard, but at least he does fight back in that one, because that's one of the few times he does. But this one, I said, okay, it's over. First of all, if you remember in the interview scene when they were coming in, there was an alert on the screen that there were strangers on the premises. So somehow they knew that people had entered the gates. And when Dodge shows up, does she beam? Does she teleport? What does she do? She just walks out of nowhere and she comes up on him sitting in his chair. Then a pit bull charges her and smells her and says, nah, she's all right. I'm like, really? by the power of Mary Sue, this dog is just going to be like, nah, she's okay. Really? Which leads me to the whole biochemics of androids with positronic neuron brains. I'm going to get to that in a minute because that's about to get on my nerves. I got a rant on that one. And then what happens after that is that she says something. Now, who was it that mentioned the creepy vibe? Was that Nemesis?
Yeah, I think so.
She says something to the effect of, everything within me tells me that I'm safe with you, is her last line. She starts off, do you know me? Look at me, blah, 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 blah. And I'm saying to myself, why would you accept a stranger? Mm-hmm. That's how they're presenting themselves. But Picard instantly trusts her, instantly loves her, instantly starts giving classified information to her. Instantly, you know, just takes her into his confidence and blah, blah. And I'm saying to myself, if somebody wanted to assassinate you, Jake Picard, this would be the way. You let that girl get close enough to you, she could have stuck a knife in your chest before you knew what was happening. Mm-hmm. And as a seasoned Starfleet captain, as an admiral, you ought to know better than that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, once again, she shows emotion, but she does not give us a reason to care. So you're a little girl lost. So what? So what? And once again, it alludes to what I said before, that if you take Picard out of this mix and tell this story without the Star Trek frame, it immediately becomes more interesting. But we're supposed to care about Dodge and this instant connection purely because of member berries. Because that's another way of saying nostalgia, for those of y'all that don't know that audience listening to the podcast. Member berries, remember? So it's like, you know, there's no reason for him to accept this girl, still no reason for us to care, no reason for the kindness that he shows her, because most people would say, I'm sorry, I don't know you and I don't know anything about you. So can we at least get some more information? Can we meet at a neutral site? Can we run some tests? Can I get some fingerprints? Do you have any ID? No. Okay, I had a dream. I've been dreaming about Data, and Data's painting a magic picture, and you must be her. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. I was like, okay. So once I saw this, and she just welcomed right into his confidence, if this was a Joss Whedon show, she would have been an assassin, and she would have killed him.
Yeah,
she would have been like Saffron on Our Mrs. Reynolds and Trash.
Yeah,
she might have even black bagged him.
Right, right, exactly. Because it just doesn't
with knives.
And then she does the thing with the necklace, and you know, I understand the use of symbolism. That's a very common writing tool. Nothing wrong with that. But if you didn't want people to know that your daughter was an illegal synth, or if you didn't want people to know that you're an illegal synth, or maybe you don't know, all I'm saying is I wouldn't carry a marker that marks me in some way like that, that's so obvious. Basically because of all the pictures and all the motion capture and all the, because we could identify people like this now. We could pick out a set of twins anywhere on Earth now, and if they have the same type of jewelry, we can connect them because agencies do that all the time. So I'm sure in Picard's time. So I'm just saying that, you know, nothing about putting this creation out there on the low. Yet she doesn't have any memory of who she is. Yet she can be activated. Yet she knows Picard. Just no. Nothing about this worked for me. And that's when I knew we were in trouble. So give me your thoughts on this scene when Dodge meets Picard. Start with Bracey.
I'll tell you, and this is the scene that really solidified I didn't like this character, because the actress really came across as just acting at me, you know, acting in the scene. There's I'm not going to blame the actress, because it could be, given the dialogue, she just had nothing to go with. And in point of fact, when we see her later, she actually plays two roles in the show. When we see her later, I find myself having a more of a connection with her second character than I do with Dodge. So, yeah, right off the bat, she approaches Picard, and you have to really pay attention throughout this whole thing to understand, because as you've said, there's all these sensors, like, oh, the guys are here for the interview and all this stuff, but like, she manages to sneak up, and we don't know why, and they allude later that, oh, and it's not even confirmed, they just allude later, like, oh, she must have some sort of cloaking technology, which doesn't make any sense, because we find out she's a biological synthetic. All right, so how she got cloaking technology in here? There's a lot of things in this show that just don't make any sense, not even from the perspective of a super high-tech society like Star Trek. And right off the way, even though she's traumatized and she's got all this stuff going, she doesn't understand. She approaches Picard, somebody she's never met, and she starts speaking at him like a stalker. And he just kind of rolls with it. And it's like, you know, this, you know, I don't care if he hasn't been, you know, an admiral, or whatever, for X many years, like that old military training just doesn't die out. Something in it should have kicked in. It's like, hey, whoa, what's going on here?
Come on now. Come on, Jeff. Yeah. You put you now.
Man, the scene just plays out so poorly for all of that. And then, as you've also said, like, you know, you've got this necklace that he asked to look at. And oddly enough, even though she states, like, oh, you know, my father gave this to me. And in another scene, you find out he still got it. Like, he never gave it back. And she never was like, hey, you know, I want this keepsake from my dad since my whole life's been turned upside down. I'd love to have that again. But for plot convenience, Picard's going to hold on to this thing.
but he did give it back to her in the scene.
So but then how does he end up with it later? Like I said, there's so many lapses of continuity. And not just from the movies or the TV show, but within this episode itself, there's things that they're like, did nobody review the script? You know, like, how many writers did you have on this? How did you guys as an aggregate miss these things? But you just want things to happen, so you're just going to brute force them into happening, even if they just don't play right. And if you're going to be writing a scene, if you write anything, you know, from being a comic book writer and short story writer and things like that, one of the best things you can do is read your script out loud. And if it sounds weird, go back and do it again. And it doesn't feel like they did that at all for this scene.
It's just an impassioned plea from a stranger.
Yeah.
And we need a stronger reason for someone to not say, please get off my property.
Yeah.
Or just anything, just no. And it's also, again, by the power of Mary Sue, because I doubt he would have responded to a guy that way, and that might be pushing, but I still stand by that. If that had been a young man, he may not have responded that way, maybe. Mm. And so anyway, go ahead.
A dog would have bit him. So
she's got she's got two modes, damsel in distress or like, you know, Mary Sue. So yeah. Just depends on what mode she's flipped to, I guess.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I honestly, like, this whole scene, it was just like the point where I was asking myself constantly, why are you not calling Federation Security? Why are you not on this girl? I mean, she comes across as so creepy half the time. The things that she's saying just don't add up, or at least they don't sound like they would be convincing to someone who's rational. And if there's anything that Picard is, he's a rational dude. You know, this is a man who's a scholar. You know, he's usually a lot of times in his own head. And here he is taking dream logic and these just, you know, half-baked things that he might want to be true and just jumping to conclusions, you know, that Picard would not take.
Never.
And it's just never, you know, I would think that he would be smarter than this, even if it's just a question of, okay, let me take you down to the station and then we're going, you know, we'll ask questions and we'll try to figure this out for you. You know, just anything other than come into my house where you could maybe have me killed in the middle of the night. That would not happen. It's absolute lunacy. And everything involving, I will also say one thing that is absolutely criminal in this whole episode, and honestly, everything that I've seen in Picard up to this point, is why are you not calling Geordi LaForge? Because
yeah.
Geordi was his best friend. If there is anyone who would maybe know things about Data that you wouldn't, it would be Geordi. So, I mean, you know, not one phone call to him, even if you couldn't get LeVar Burton away to have an appearance, just at least like a telephone, well, not a telephone call, but a holocall to Geordi for like 5 seconds, or saying, I'm going to leave a message for him. Just anything that would show that you were putting some effort into this, because Geordi, not only in addition to being Data's best friend and someone who he confided a lot into, is an engineer. And this is a guy who has also worked extensively on Data. So if there is anyone in the galaxy who knows everything about Soong-type androids and whether this woman would be one, it would be Geordi. And the fact that this never crossed his mind, I find absolutely unbelievable and a major omission in the script. But there's just nothing that, and in addition that there's nothing there, you know, that makes me like this character. I mean, and it's not even that I dislike her. She's just there. She seems like she is really a robot. You know, she seems like she is basically a robot, like pretending to be a human and not doing a very good job of it. And I don't know how much of that is the acting and how much of this the script, like we've discussed. It could have been, you know, all of it. But there's just nothing there that gives me a sense that this character has any humanity to her in any way. So why should I root for her, you know, for Picard to want to help her? There's just nothing there. I was shut off for a good part of the episode after this, just because I just thought that the introduction of this character into Picard's world was so forced. It made no sense. They omitted major points they should have addressed. It's just a colossal fail.
All that stuff you said about Geordi, I said that almost verbatim. So all that what you said was just like a trip through my brain when I watched this. I'm like, wait. How are you not calling Geordi? How is Geordi not a part of this? This whole thing is about Data and his offspring and just everything you said to the T. Go ahead, Nemesis.
All right. I think that Jeff and all of you guys hit a lot of the points I wanted to hit. So I'm just going to hit a couple different things here. First of all, as far as I love the dog. I'm just going to throw that out there. That really has nothing to do with anything. But
he was the one. He was the best character in the whole show. Let's put it out of the way.
That dog was awesome. That dog was cool, man. Picard's whole thing, you know, except for that one moment of fire in the interview. He comes off as senile and bordering on, you know, dementia. And honestly, later on in the show, when he wakes up on the couch after there's an explosion after Dodge's Avengers moment, I honestly thought that the whole thing had taken place in Picard's head. That's how convinced I was that he's gone.
You know, I thought they were going to do that too.
That he's completely mentally gone. So that's one thing. The second thing is both Steve and Jeff didn't want to attack the actress or criticize her. I'm going right there. I think it's the actress, to be honest with you. I think that somebody told her that Dodge is desperate in this. And you look at the acting of the other people on this show, and Jeff mentioned it with the two Romulans and also with, you know, Brent Spiner and Patrick Stewart. They have many layers of their acting, and they're very natural. It's obvious to her that she only acts on one level, and she has that one emotion that was out there. And so this whole scene, everything is longing and desperate. It's longing, desperate eyes looking for her. And it's like somebody told her that the core of this character is longing. And it was creepy with Picard, but it was downright disconcerting later on in the episode because she's talking to this other Romulan dude later, right at the end. And now she has a longing FB look in her eyes. And she's undressing this dude, and I was, like, uncomfortable watching it. And it's just, like, that seemed like the only thing she could do, she could convey the whole time. Honestly, I think it's the actress. Yes, I don't think the writing is the greatest either, but I think this actress, and then there's another actress later on, are poor. I hate to say it, but I really think they're poor. The other actress I'm talking about is the one that played the professor at the Institute in Okinawa. I don't think that she was very good.
Days from Institute. Don't get me started. My goodness. Go ahead. Sorry.
So that's all I wanted to say. You know, all the other points you hit on as far as plot and everything, I'm in agreement for the most part. But those two things really stood out for me. And yeah, I mean, the biggest thing for me is Picard really comes off as frail, senile, and borderline with dementia. And honestly, when he woke up on the couch, I thought that's where we were going, is that all of this had been some sort of hallucination. And when it didn't turn out to be that, that's where I really disconnected, because I was like, this is all so unbelievable and so ridiculous. Not to mention the fact that, you know, we're going to get to it, but there's an explosion at Starfleet. Picard is there, which would be unusual anyway. And then suddenly he's magically transported home. How did that make sense?
We're going to hit on that one.
It's so funny because when you said that, I actually thought that do the explosion, you find they're Romulans. I thought it was going to turn out that his housekeepers were in on it, and they were all just going to try and play off like, no, nothing happened. Wait, what is this woman you're talking about? No, that happened.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that would have been more fun to watch. Okay, now let me take a moment here. Let me take a moment here and say, I absolutely, 100% unequivocally, do not buy the science of the premise. I can't stand it. I can't stand the idea that, number one, Data survived that explosion, but number two, that he could be replicated, and that, number three, his neurons could be used as a base pattern and housed by a flesh and blood creature, flesh and blood person, because of the nature of his positronic net, the nature of what that brain can do, the nature of its construction. And there's no way it doesn't even make any sense that you could take something that is circuit based and turn it into flesh or vice versa. I would have accepted a mind meld between Data and Picard, because Picard still has Borg implants in his head.
Yeah.
Faster than I would accept the science of replicating Data or assumed base android type brain and implanting it in a human, and it doesn't know what it is, and it has the best of both worlds, and there's no side effects. No.
So closing up Positron, come on.
If I wasn't already checked out, as soon as we get into the science of what they're trying to say, I'm like, no, how?
See, how? I had other issues, but it was from the biological side. So if they're trying to tell me that she is a biological human who just happens to have an android brain, okay, then she's constrained by biology. And when she jumps 50 feet in the air and lands
right
with no side effects at all, I'm like, okay. Now, the only other person I've seen that had genetically engineered strength in Star Trek were the people, Khan. And even Khan couldn't have done that. So, yeah, no. So,
well, so he can in Abrams Star Trek.
Yeah. They're trying to lift all of the properties that they want to make the character and make the plot work, but ignoring the logistics and the practicality and the sheer ridiculous nature of telling me that you can replicate Data and his brain, because if it were that simple, it would have been done by now by scientists all over the galaxy. And, you know, so there's some things that develop on that later on, but I'm saying nothing about that makes any sense. And then I want to get into what Nemesis touched on, and then I'll hear from you guys. I want to touch on Agnes Girardi. Oh, my goodness, I hate her. I hated her from the first scene, the first word. I hated her. I just hated her. I knew that there wasn't going to be anything good about her as a character. I don't know how I knew, but I knew. I'm like, there is literally no redeeming value to you as a character. I knew it. And I don't know how I knew it. I just did. I hate her voice. I hate her smile. I hate the way she thinks. I hate everything that she said. I hate her.
She's got a smirk always. Even when she's not smirking, she's smirking. You know?
Yeah, yeah. It's just like, now you're getting around to that. No, I promised you earlier. Really? Well, your snark is not funny.
Yeah.
And also, like I said, the setup for her lab doesn't make any sense if there's a synth ban. So you're allowed to study possibilities and theoretics and blah, 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 and you can't build anything. That's what we call a waste of resources. Why would you study all that stuff if you can't actually create anything unless it's for military purposes? Or, you know, but then again, it should be a Section 31 kind of thing. It should be a covert operation. It shouldn't be something you can walk into Daystrom and just see going on, and then somebody's talking to you about it. So give me your thoughts on the science that they're trying to get us to buy on Data's replication and what Dodge and Soji really are. And if you want, you can throw in your reactions to Girardi as well. Start with Steve.
Oh, man. I think you covered a lot of what I was going to say. This whole business of positronic cloning is ridiculous. Ridiculous. And again, you know, you would think that some of this had been done before. I mean, not just with Data, but with Lore. They were not able to replicate him either. They had Lal. Lal failed. They couldn't replicate anything, you know, even having her her remains. I mean, you would think that there would be some forward progress, and I imagine Data and Data did say that, you know, he had made efforts, you know, to try to, you know, recreate himself, and even Data himself, you know, with his advanced abilities, with everything that he knew from Dr. Sung, with all the attempts that he had made to create synthetic life, he was never able to do it, and certainly not to the level of being able to have actual human exoskeleton. I mean, this is not Terminator. just the entire, and also the entire idea of having a human frame and having all the advanced abilities, you know, of an android. It just seems like, you know, they were just throwing everything in a blender and not really thinking out anything about how this would work or how it would function or how it would progress from anything that they had learned from before. You know, they didn't take any, even like taking stuff from the Borg. I could have bought some things from that. There was none of that mentioned. It's just, you know, this ridiculous sounding process just because we wanted to have an android that could pass as human with all these abilities so we could have our Mary Sue character, and no thought was placed whatsoever in the story logic or anything like that. As for Girardi, I didn't have any real strong opinions about her. I just didn't care about her one way or another. It seemed like she was just kind of there to sort of represent the stonewalling on the part of Federation, you know, to Picard's inquiry and all of this. And I kind of got the feeling that if she wasn't part of the conspiracy covering up these androids, you know, then, you know, she was at least connected in some way to it, because it just kind of came across that she just didn't feel like she was really trying to help Picard. She seemed like she's just kind of going along with him, you know, either to maintain appearances or because she felt that she had to. I mean, even her line about, oh, I wish you had come on a day that I wasn't here. I'm just, oh, yeah, you're really being helpful. I mean, I can really tell that you're going to be a whole lot of help to Picard. So it was just sort of, I didn't really like the arrogance, but it, and I kind of got a sense that there was a little bit of that, but it's I really didn't dislike her. I was just like, okay, she's here to fulfill this plot function to tell, you know, Picard what he needs to know, or in this case that, you know, how much he, you know, shouldn't know, and then just kind of move on with it. But all in all, this I think was actually one of the biggest fail of the entire episode, and indeed in the entire concept of this story, from at least from what I've seen so far.
I think you hit it, Steve. She's humoring him in a very patronizing and condescending way. And yep. maybe that's what it was that just really got, because I just felt it instantly. But anyway, go ahead, Bracey.
Yeah, it's funny the way you just phrase that right there, because then it translates right into some more kind of like elder ignorance or elder abuse. And I was like, oh, the old fuddy-duddy. Let's do whatever we can to get him out of here. For me, there might be one slight indication when that line that I wish you'd come on a day that I wasn't here, as if like is she is leading him astray, or maybe this whole idea of the dystopian Federation is so infectious that we've got kind of a 1984 going on. I was like, oh, if only you could have come by my house where there are all these listening and, you know, devices and cameras everywhere. Maybe I could give you the straight deal. But so maybe we'll find out later on that she's playing a role here to satisfy who might ever be watching. Now, writers of Star Trek, current Star Trek, I should say, you need to understand that fans of Star Trek are not just Star Trek nerds, but because Star Trek did at least try to ground itself somewhat in actual science here and there, that we are a bit of a scientific nerds as well. And that means your whole dodge thing does not work at all. And we're going to be aware of that. As already been stated, you're not going to take circuitry and make it work in a biological format in the context of the Star Trek universe and pass any sort of assessment of what is a human. Like, oh, you know, we will make synthetics that appear to be perfectly human, yet they've got all these android powers. Well, in order to do all the things she's got, if she's got the super speed and the super strength and all these other things she can do, she's going to have some sort of increased neural activity. She's going to have extra flexible tendons and ligaments. She's going to have increased muscle and bone density. She talks about she's able to hear things, you know, from blocks away. Star Trek has scanners that can scan you on a molecular level, if not further. There's no way she's going to pass as human with all these enhancements. At the very least, everybody's going to think you're the next wave of the eugenics war and want to terminate you right away. It's bad enough being a synthetic. Now she's got double jeopardy on her because she's a synthetic and eugenics, you know, a gene splice creation. So none of that makes any sense whatsoever. And plus, with her being a creation of Maddox, I don't know how much Data end up working with Maddox, but I just can't see Maddox actually recreating Data on any level, especially since his positronic net is gone. I don't know if he borrowed some scans from Geordi or what, because once again, this whole series is not big on filling in the gaps, and that's one of my biggest issues with this whole thing. Is because they threw everything at the wall to see what was going to stick. Everything's moving too fast. They're cramming all this stuff in and just kind of hoping the pacing and the action is going to distract you from the fact that it just isn't working at all.
Now, you just described a lot of the new Trek, and you definitely described the new Star Wars. We're just going to keep throwing stuff at you and hope you don't notice that there's no internal logic.
I was like, ooh, shiny.
Right, because what you basically just said was, if Khan and Data had a kid, that would be Don.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Nemesis.
You know, all three of you guys hit on a lot of stuff, so I'm just going to hit on some stuff from a writing standpoint, and then I do want to talk about that character just for another moment. you know, when you write science fiction, I write science fiction. I'm a big reader and watcher of science fiction, studied it for years. I took a series of classes with Orson Scott Card on science fiction, and science fiction and fantasy used to be together. And one of the things he said is whenever you are writing science fiction or fantasy, you know, if you're basing your, you know, you have magic or science in there, you need to come up with your rules. And then you've got to follow your rules, whatever they are. You know, if you want to do blood magic and magic has limitations, you figure out your magic system and then you base everything around that. Same thing with science, you know, and everything has that. Lord of the Rings has that. You know, even though we don't get it, we get it in dribs and drabs. There is a system to magic in Lord of the Rings. There's a system to magic in other things. Even in D&D, there's a system of magic. Well, in Star Trek, you have, in Star Wars, you have science and kind of mysticism going together. In Star Trek, you have science. And you have to follow the rules. And even if you as the writer don't notice when you break the rules, there are fans out there who are so devoted. This is what Jeff was hitting on. They are so devoted to this IP that you have developed that they know the rules. And so when you break the rules, it is apparent to them and it is grating on a basic level. And I think that's the problem here is that rules have already been set down in place for the science of Star Trek, for the positronic brain and everything else like that. And you've broken those rules. And sometimes you can bend the rules, but if you're going to bend the rules, then you need to be a very good writer and you need to really think about what you're doing and how to bend the rules without breaking them so that it fits into the larger narrative. And that didn't happen at all in this scene. That's my point about the scene. Now, the character in particular. The thing with this character is she reminds me of another science character from a Star Trek movie. She reminds me of that whale biologist from Star Trek 4. And it's just, I don't know what it is. And I don't even think she's as talented an actress as that lady was in that movie. I think she's a very good actress. I just think that character was annoying. But it's annoying. And I'm going to show some of my toxic masculinity here. After a while, when she started talking, all I was hearing was wham, 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 wham. I just tuned out. I didn't want to hear any more from her. And I'm sorry if that offends anyone out there, but that is just the truth. All I heard was just a droning noise. And the worst part of this episode for me was at the end when they showed coming up this season on Picard, and I saw that this character was not a throwaway, but she's actually on the ship. And I was like, oh God, no. You know, so that pretty much sums up that character for me in a nutshell. So the two characters, the two actresses that I feel are just terrible seem to have parts going forward. And I'm not looking forward to that.
All right, now let's go on to the scene where solidifies everything we just talked about, which is everything we've said so far. Amazingly beautiful in terms of cinematography and completely stupid in terms of everything else. And that is Picard and Dodge are leaving the Institute and he's just basically giving her a huge exposition dump. And then the Romulans start to beam in. And I think Bracey hit on it earlier in terms of the way they're attacking her. Then we talked about backwards technology, but also I want to throw in the wrinkle of one at a time. How are you going to be at a spaceship level? How are you going to be, you know, you're not even hovering in the atmosphere. You're clearly out of the atmosphere. So you're either already in the Institute or you're in orbit. How are you going to be able to beam as many people as you need in a situation? But you beam them in one at a time. And you already know what you're dealing with. So, you know, you could have shot her from orbit. Once again, you could have tried to capture her. You could have maybe surrounded her with more than one opponent or whatever, but no, they just keep beaming them one at a time. And then, like we already talked about the super leap, as soon as I saw that, you hear me say it all the time, if I was the breaking TV kind of a person, that was the breaking TV moment. I was like, really? Really? She just takes off and does a 40, 50-foot leap. And like you said, it doesn't even hurt her ankles or her tendons or her knees. She's not out of breath. There's no impact. And then they do the most subversive thing ever. She's killed by some corrosive acid blood, like it was from a xenomorph.
Yeah.
And then the gun explodes, and I'm saying, wait.
And the gun, and the worst thing about the gun is, I can understand it taking like a small area, but no, it blows up the whole place. Massive explosion, like this was a nuke or something.
Okay, I do have an answer to that.
I'm like, is that gun made out of C4? Is that a small nuke? What? Wait a minute. One more thing. And then the PS de resistance. We have somewhere between a 70 to a 90 year old man that's blown backwards.
Yeah.
That was caught in that explosion. And it didn't kill him. And it didn't break any bones. Now, I have had to minister and serve and work with elderly people. And I know that when you have a bone break, in your 80s or 90s, it completely changes your quality of life, and the bone may never heal.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly won't heal like it will when you're young, but it completely changes the game because, you know, unless you're extraordinary, your body normally can't take that kind of damage at those ages. Yet we have him caught in an explosion and blown backwards several feet. And he just wakes up and, you know, and he just is sweating a little bit and then he's all good. I'm saying, what? So that whole scene was like, okay, any believability that you wanted to have in this episode is gone because none of what happened made any sense. So give me your thoughts on that episode. Start with Nemesis. On that scene, start with Nemesis.
Okay, well, we've already hit a bunch of what I wanted to say. The only thing I want to add to all of this, actually, there's two things. One with the transporter stuff. I don't know if you guys caught it, but at one point, she shoved one of the Romulans off a precipice,
yes.
And they beamed him out mid-fall. So I'm like, if you were that good with your beaming technology, why'd you beam these guys down at all? Just throw a knife at the beam pad. You already showed you throw a knife. Throw a knife at the beam pad and just beam it in and right into her back, you know?
Right.
So just do that. But on a larger context, you know, I know that you have your movie rules or your TV rules. This is my first one. This is Nemesis movie rule number one. Can Hollywood stop doing the explosions that blow people backwards? It doesn't happen. If an explosion is big enough to blow you off your feet and blow you back that far, you're dead. And it's probably a nuclear explosion. It's not a grenade. It's not a mortar shell. It's not an artillery shell. Now, it could burst your eardrums and hurt your internal organs and everything. It might even knock you back on your butt, but it's not throwing you back 60 feet. Can we just stop this, please? I mean, that's all I'm going to say is, come on, Hollywood. We've got enough live action, you know, real life shots of explosions and what happens in them that we could be a little more realistic. You know, I'm just so tired of this. And you're absolutely right. Picard, at that, I mean, dude could not run up a flight of steps without looking like he was about ready to have a coronary, you know? And he gets thrown backwards by this humongous, you know, non-real explosion, and he's not a dead man. It's like, give me a break. You know, of course he's dead. So, yeah, it was completely just – the whole thing was dumb. It was straight out of a bad superhero movie. So,
go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I think that covers a lot of it for me. I'm going to say, in addition, that this is another scene where everything is moving fast, so you can't see what's really going on and pointing out everything terrible in it. They've completely violated the rules for Romulans. This is another thing that I'm going to kind of jump a little bit off of Nemesis with. Is that, you know, there are certain rules when you establish your fictional science and your fictional races is what can they do, what can they not do? And one of the things that you do not establish is that, you know, when these people have been around for 50 years or at least since the 1960s, you don't suddenly decide, hey, let's say that they have acidic blood and we have never shown it in any particular episode that they have ever been in. No. We're just going to do the xenomorph blood thing because it looks cool. Not because it makes sense, not because it's anything that has ever been attributed to Romulans or anything like that. We're just making it up as we go. you know, here, have your episode. And the explosion didn't make sense. It was, nothing made sense. And I just, and the first time I watched this as well, it just shows you just how, and I really hate to say this, but like, you know, how basically how Captain Picard is just a little too old to be doing a lot of physical action. Because how can is in the world he can keep up with all of this, particularly with the way that they're portraying him, because they're portraying him, you know, as very addled, as very dementia driven. He was already, what, 60 some before? What is he approaching 90 now? Even with Federation science, I mean, that's at this point, you know, he's really slowed down. So it just comes to show another character that had been in this, even if it was Riker, I would believe a little bit more easily than this.
Hell, when I was in my late 30s, I take my 2-year-old to Disneyland, and I need the whole day to recover afterwards.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. That, you know, it doesn't make any sense in any way, shape, or form. And I'm like, you should at least take this opportunity to show him actually injured or recovering, or explain how did you survive that. In terms of the acid blood, I think they were trying to do we have the acid in the secret tooth in the mouth secret spy thing.
That's totally where I was going to go with it.
So, yeah, so I don't know if they were actually saying that their blood is actually acidic, because, yeah, no, we've never seen that.
Well, Vulcans or Romulans. And if we want to get down in the nitty gritty, sorry to cut in real quick, Jeff. Let's be honest with you. We already talked about how in the world did Picard end up back at home. Well, why is Starfleet security not going, why are you on Starfleet grounds? How did this girl get on Starfleet grounds? Now there's an explosion. There's dead Romulans all over the place. Sir, we're going to need you in a Starfleet hospital, and then we're going to need to interrogate you.
Yeah, exactly. Why is he being debriefed?
Stop taking all my points. He just ends up in Chateau Picard with no explanation. I mean, you would think there would at least be people...
Oh, yeah, just break in to take all the points I was going to make, man. Leave me nothing to say. Yeah. Leave me nothing. That's fine. Just steal it all. Let me try and address a couple of things that haven't been addressed yet, because really there is nothing more to address outside of a couple of nitpicks. Phasers blowing up. It is long established in TOS that phasers, despite their small size, pack a lot of energy. And there are times that they show them using them as like little bombs, and they could be pretty devastating. Although you would think by the time you get to the 23rd century, or almost near the 24th, I guess, in this age, that they would have sort of fixed that problem. But maybe they like having an improvisational grenade. Exactly. But it is ridiculous that, you know, it blowing up Dodge, I'm fine with that. It blowing Picard away, who was like a good 60 feet away, off his feet for several meters, is just patently ridiculous and would obviously kill him, even with all the advanced technology that Starfleet has. Like you, I thought initially when Dodge hit the Romulan that the green he was spitting out was like his blood. Like, you know, I guess they have a green blood like Vulcans since they are an offshoot. But as soon as it started like burning her in the weapon, I immediately went to like, oh, he's probably got the capsule tooth and he's got the acid. But that's only something I, as a super geek, would really understand. Your average audience member is not going to understand that. And if you don't give them that understanding, it just doesn't make any sense. You're just going to assume like, oh, I guess Romulans are like Xenomorphs. They got acid blood. And that's the wrong assumption to make, because we have seen Romulans bleed before and they've never caused anything to smolder and burn. The transporter, I'm glad Nemesis mentioned that, because like I did catch that too when like the one Romulan assassin gets knocked off the stairway and he gets transported. I did think that was pretty cool because we'd never seen that before. But unfortunately, once again, it also doesn't make sense. If you've got that sort of precision teleporting, if you can save a guy from falling on his head from about 30 feet up, then why aren't you just transporting her into a stasis field? Unless, once again, like, oh, she's got this hidden cloaking technology that we're just supposing, no confirmation. I guess she's got anti-transporter technology biologically somehow. No. It just doesn't work, guys. Why do you keep doing it if it doesn't work?
Well, we did see it in the first J.J. Abrams Trek, Star Trek 2009, because they did beam Kirk and Sulu out of midair because they were about to, they were falling off the machine and they were about to fall.
I totally forgot about that.
Right, but that was considered to be like an extraordinary feat, and it took Chekhov like a good minute and a half to lock onto him and be able to do it. So,
well, I still didn't buy it because I don't know what happens to your momentum when you realize.
Yeah, you still slap into the transporter pad, but on top of that, you remember like they did that feat in the Abrams Star Trek, and yet somehow they couldn't save Spock's mom from falling into the abyss as the planet crumbled around them.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a whole nother pod because that one has, but they borrow the same type of makeup, whatever tech we need attitude for this. Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. That is the thing. It's not technology. Star Trek is using magic now because magic solves everything.
The last thing I will say about this scene for me is that I am going to go a little further than you did, Dave, which is to say that once she did that leap, I think Doja's Mary Sue status was confirmed. You know, it was like Mary Sue status confirmed. So much so that when I was watching. Yeah, so much so that when I saw her skin starting to melt from the acid, I expected her to have a healing factor. Honest to God, I was watching it and I was expecting her to have a healing factor. Yep. So.
I did not understand why they spent an entire episode building her up and showing her to be basically invincible.
And then they blow her up.
And then it killed her.
Yeah.
And then they killed her that way. So anyway, let's move to a conclusion with this. So we'll look at the final scenes. The second character that I could not stand on sight is little Romulan Winter Soldier. Can't stand him. Oh, my goodness. I can't stand him. And just from the moment I saw him, I'm like, you are useless. Okay, you are a Gary Sue. Whatever it is that they're going to have you do, I already know I'm not going to believe it. I absolutely do not believe that you're going to be able to do whatever they say you're going to do. You don't look as smart enough as they're going to say that you are. You're not subtle enough to be the spy they're going to say you are. You're not handsome enough to seduce. She meets you and all of a sudden she's with you. Yeah, no. Could not stand him. And then so we finally meet Soji, the twin, played obviously by the same actress. And I felt the same kind of thing. And that was basically kind of emotionally flat. Like, you know, I realized that this episode has spent all of its runtime telling me that I should care about you, but I don't. I should by now, but I don't. And they just killed your sister in such a ridiculous but spectacular way. And then they kind of all of a sudden shift to you. We haven't spent any time with you. So you are now basically a living MacGuffin. Once again, you are not a character. And then the big reveal at the end, and that is that they pull the camera back and they show that the Romulan Reclamation Center is actually a not fully functional under repair Borg unit. And I call complete chicken crap on that. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
No, what you guys did was you knew that something called the Borg was in Star Trek, and it was popular, so you decided to throw it in here.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you have no idea how the Borg work. So you just thought that would be really cool. But I'm like, no. So once again, everything that happens is just completely unbelievable or just emotionally disconnected because I'm like with Soji, once again, you know, we don't hear any personality in your lines. We don't hear you, you know, being a smart aleck. We don't hear you maybe being melancholy. We don't hear you. We don't even see you being hesitant about some dude that literally just walked into the ship. Mm-hmm. And you're already just, you know, teeing up to get with him. And really, he didn't even seduce you. He just had a conversation. And you're just like, oh, well, let me break me off a piece of that. Really?
Exactly. Really?
Yes, I guess it gets lonely in space.
She has other options. You know, she has other options. And then once again, I agree with what Nemesis said about Mary Sue status confirmed with the leap. But when we meet Soji, for me, the status that was confirmed was the fact that you guys are counting on Picard being in this to make us care. Because once again, if the connection to Picard is the only reason we'd ever watch anything past this episode. Mm-hmm. If he wasn't in this, there's no reason to care about anything that's happened. It needs to be written better. Like I said, the concepts are great, but the execution is ridiculously poor and not proper for Star Trek. So give me your thoughts on meeting Soji and finding out that she's working in a Borg cube. Start with Bracey.
Okay, there's a lot of interesting things to unpack here. First of all, just to refer back to the last scene for a moment, something occurred to me that I forgot to mention. That scene really solidified that Captain Picard in this context is effectively useless. And I think the only proper way to use him in this series would be to put him in a captain's chair where he doesn't have to do anything physical. Mm-hmm. But he can still be a commanding presence and have an effect on the world around him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, back to this scene. Because you guys mentioned how they seem to be wanting to take everything from all the Star Trek timelines and various medias and throw them into this thing, I'm going to add one for you. I am a player of Star Trek or Starfleet Online. And guess what? One of the game things, because the game does try to tie all these things together in its own sort of canon. Guess what the Romulans use in the game? And this game has been out for like quite a few years before this show came out. The Romulans have been investigating and using Borg technology.
I remember.
As a matter of fact, Borg technology was supposed to have enhanced the mining ship that Nero used to destroy Vulcan in the J.J. Abrams universe. So they've decided to tie in all these extraneous things that you've got to be like some sort of crazy Super Trek fan. You got to... It's like with the Star Wars now. If you don't absorb all of it, you don't get the whole story. So if you're not absorbing all of this extra media, you don't understand this whole story. So, again, this whole Borg thing is weird. And I'm curious to see, because the Red Letter Media guys actually floated a theory that, well, you know what, we're going to say like maybe the Romulans are responsible for the Borg. That was one of their predictions. Like to see if that's how that's going to be worked out. But that's neither here nor there. The Romulans using Borg technology, like DTR said, it doesn't make any sense. Borg technology doesn't work like that unless they're hijacking a bunch of people and plugging them into the ship somehow. Or maybe this could be interesting. Maybe they want synthetics to plug into the Borg ports to power their ship and create their own little collective. That might be what they're going for. But if that's what they're going for, when Dodge was activated, why bother destroying her when it still seems like it'd be more important to capture her? I liked the new character slightly more than Dodge. What was her name again?
Soji.
Soji, yeah. I think maybe I liked her more because she had like a little moment. She's a little bit vulnerable because she's not carrying the badge of Mary Sue yet. And, you know, when the guy is making his really sort of inept sort of, you must get tired of hearing people's problems. Like, oh, you know, you might be wrong. To me, that was just a little bit of a moment of humanity that was more interesting than I'd seen a Dodge. But it's like you said on a recent podcast, DT, maybe our expectations have already been set so low that anything that's even remotely acceptable, we think is good now. And I might be guilty of that because Dodge was already so bad that I immediately gave Soji a second chance. Like, oh, okay. It's like you said, pretty boy Romulan comes out. And for one brief moment, I thought it was like, is this Discovery Spock? How did he get here? okay. No, it's not him. But like he's got kind of the same hair and almost the beard. And like you, I'm like, I'm not really feeling this character. Yeah. I don't think he's going to be all that great, and especially because the episode I watched ended with some previews of what's going to come. And I'm like, nope, I was right. No reason to like him.
What do you think about the Borg cube being the reclamation center?
Oh, is that for me or somebody else?
Yeah, for you. I mean, I know you talked about them using Borg technology, but I'm saying that final shot was supposed to be like, you know, the big shocker, the big reveal. So what do you think about that being a big reveal in this context?
You know, it should have been a big aha moment. Like, it'd been like, ooh, ah. But, like, I saw that, and I guess because everything else doesn't work in the show, I just didn't care. It didn't shock me, nor did it kind of surprise me. It seemed kind of par for the course, and honestly, I didn't care. And that's like, that is the biggest fail you can make as a writer, if I don't give a...
Well, once again, another status confirmed, and that is that they've taken TNG's and perhaps the whole of Star Trek's biggest, most fearsome enemy and reduced them down to the point where we're not terrified when we see them on screen. When we first meet the Borg, and definitely in Best of Both Worlds, we are holding our breath all throughout those episodes because holy cow. But now it's like, eh, go ahead, Nemesis.
Yeah, you know, with Soji, this character, once again, this actress, you know, her whole, she skeeved me out, you know, and the guy coming in, you know, Romulan Bieber there, you know, just to be sure wanna be, you know, I just didn't get it. And she's adjusting with her eyes, and then you see from the, you know, coming up, they go to bed together. So I'm like, I don't know what's going on here. Maybe they shot him from the waist up because they didn't want to reveal what his true superpower is or something, because I didn't get it. And I didn't buy the chemistry between them. And like I said, the actress, the way she played it, it was really kind of creepy. As far as the Borg reveal, that was a get the blank out of here moment for me. I was like, you know, I was like, come on, you know. And it's got Romulan, you know, they integrated Romulan technology into a Borg cube. I'm like, what are you bringing to the table that's going to, you know, and how are you doing that? And I was just like, get the hell out of here with that. And looking at it, you know, I think there are some interesting, you know, my writer's brain turned on when you guys were talking about it. And I was thinking about some interesting plot things I could do with that. Like the reason the synthetics rebelled was because they found out that the Romulans were incorporating synthetics into the Borg and enslaving them or something. That might be interesting, but I know there. I already know that's not where they're going with it, you know, because that's too good, you know. So, and I'm not even saying that that's real good. You know, that was just off the top of my head. I'm just saying it's too good. So, I was just like, you know, I didn't buy it. And the Romulans controlling Borg technology and improving upon it and integrating their own technology, I was like, the next thing you know is I'm going to see the Jawas in The Mandalorian rebuild the Death Star, and they're trolling around the galaxy of the Death Star. Because that's basically the equivalent, you know.
My goodness. It's true, though. It's true. Go ahead, Steve.
Oh, yeah. My general reaction was apathy throughout the entire scene. I just didn't care. I didn't feel like there was any real difference between Soji and Daj. And I think half of this one, I really think I will blame the actress for this particular scene, just because I don't feel that there was a whole lot done to differentiate her from Daj at all. I felt like they were basically going through the same motions. I just didn't care. And you have the same thing with their respective boyfriends. It's just that one boyfriend is a, you know, target, and another boyfriend is, you know, trying to set her up for reasons that I don't care about. I did see the bits at the end trying to, you know, foreshadow what was going on. And I'm just like, okay, they're clearly are trying to, you know, make us feel some kind of tension that, oh my God, he's going to betray her. Can Picard get there in time before something bad happens? But the problem with that is that requires me actually caring about Soji, and I don't. and it's just, I don't care about any of these characters, you know, pretty boy Romulan or I don't know. I don't care. He can die for all I care. And the whole business with throwing in the Borg and into this, it just feels like they're basically, you know, look for the coolest things that they could find and throw it together and say, oh, gee, look at this new thing we've got coming up. But, you know, we have synthetics and we have Romulans and we have, you know, the Borg, and it's all going to come together. And trust us, it'll come to something. I don't care. I don't want to find out. I'm just coming to the end of this, and it's just like, a thing happened. and I'm supposed to care, but I don't. I mean, I keep hoping the next episode will get better, but everything I keep hearing, it's like I have a feeling it's going to be a downward spiral for the next, I don't know, what is it, 9 episodes? So, yeah, I didn't really care.
Yeah, 10 total. Well,
you know what would have been more interesting to me? Instead of a Borg cube, because Nero's ship got sucked back into a black hole in the Abrams Star Trek, what if that's the ship they had?
That would have been interesting.
This crazy Borg-enhanced world-eater ship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and maybe they could have explained the red matter.
Yeah.
That's the biggest MacGuffin I've ever seen.
That's a J.J. Abrams mystery box. So I don't think we're ever going to see it.
Right. You got something with no scientific basis that both creates specified black holes and has something to do with time travel. But no. But anyway.
Goes great with tortilla chips, too.
Yeah. So moving on to closing thoughts, we pretty much said, you know, everything I think that needs to be said. But what I will say, keying in on something that Nemesis said at the top of the podcast, and that is that the contrast and difference between a show being made by people that love the characters and love the world and respect them, as opposed to being made by people who have stated unequivocally that their purpose was to humiliate and denigrate and take things down a peg, and who didn't understand any of the elements of the story world that they were using. So it's how we felt about Stargirl. If you haven't listened to that I definitely encourage you to check it out. But when you have a show being made by someone who actually created the character of Stargirl and then actually knows the JSA world, you can feel the love, you can feel the reverence, you can feel the winks, the nods, you can feel the comic continuity tie-ins, you can feel that they know something about this character and they're happy to be bringing them to life. Even if you don't like everything that they do, there's still a warmth there that can't be faked. Here, it is so painfully obvious that they hate Picard, they hate Star Trek, and they hate Star Trek fans to the point where I don't know why Patrick Stewart agreed to this. I don't think he feels that way, but I don't know why he would look at these scripts and say, yeah, we need to make this so. Yeah, no. So my closing thoughts are, it's one of those things where I'm just going to block it out. It's just like, you know, so much content these days is being made by people that hate the source material. I don't know when that happened, how that happened. I know why it happened. I just don't know when and how, but I do know why it happened, and it's a shame. So closing thoughts, start with Bracey.
I think part of the direction of this is actually being guided somewhat by Patrick Stewart. If you've seen his advertisements recently, he's very much on top of like the whole refugee crisis sort of thing. And I think that's a contribution that he wanted in the show. And that's a dangerous thing, allowing your actor to have too much leeway when you're writing a series. I understand he's an actor. He wants to play different things, but you're also playing a character you've played before. You've got to think in terms of the evolution of the character, not something that just becomes kind of a pet project of your own. What I have learned from watching this episode is that for something called Star Trek Picard, Picard is essentially useless in the show, at least in context of the first episode so far. I've already stated how that can be fixed. Put him in charge. Give him a ship. Let him direct the younger, more active crew to go do things. But he is still in the command. He gets the last say. He's the leader. The show should be about him. He shouldn't be part of an ensemble, per se. And most of the other characters are just bland. Really didn't care about them so much. And to quote an old 90s movie, apparently Earth girls are easy.
Oh my goodness. Sad but true. Okay, go ahead, Steve.
Okay, yeah, I would say overall, I as much as I'm kind of, you know, bashing on this, I don't really hate this episode. I'm just mostly bored by it. You know, there are just things that, you know, really are kind of throwing you out of the experience. But these are things that are keeping me from connecting to what's going on. I can't connect Jake Picard to any version that I've seen before. And what's worse is that I've been watching TNG a little bit on and off, and I'm especially seeing the difference. I mean, look at Tapestry, and you get a much different Picard. I would rather watch that. But here, it's just I'm just seeing like a Picard as a sad sack. You know, and you really don't want to see him as an action hero. You want to see him as a leader or a mentor, or, you know, somewhere where his, as Jeff has been saying, you know, where his true skills come to life. You know, in this case, you know, his, to paraphrase it with Kirk, this is his first best destiny. I mean, he's somebody who is a historian, a scholar, a, you know, somebody whose skills are mainly mental. And so you don't want to really put him in that position. But even beyond that, I mean, I just feel like this whole episode has just gone so contrary to what Star Trek is about. And it's so contrary to the lore, to the ethos of Star Trek, to Roddenberry's vision, to just everything. And it's just like, okay, well, I mean, I'm at the point where I really don't even want to acknowledge this as being official canon, because it's gone so far away from what Star Trek is, who Picard is, and everything that I've loved about this show is. So, you know, it's one of those things I mostly have up to this point been kind of tuning it out. And, you know, getting to the end of this, I want to go back to tuning it out and, you know, enjoy like the Orville or like, you know, the past Treks where they got it. So yeah, this, I just feel like I don't really want to see another episode, and it's already the first episode. So somebody screwed up, pretty big time. If you can't even get me to care about episode two.
Time to tune it out. Go ahead, Nemesis.
You know, the way I feel about this series so far, really wrapped up in, you know, that last bit they showed is coming up in this season of Picard. And I feel like it's a morbid voyeurism on my part. The show is beautiful to look at, so that's nice. But really, I'm not tuning in because, you know, like Steve said, that at this point I'm really invested in the story or care about the story. I'm tuning in more because I want to see what happens with some old characters that I remember. And that's just about it. This is coming from someone it took years for me to accept the Next Generation. You know, I was so a fan of the original Star Trek that I didn't even watch The Next Generation until after I'd seen the first movie, because I didn't want to accept that they were redoing a new Enterprise and everything. So, you know, and then watching this, I just get this morbid, like I said, a morbid voyeurism. You know, I feel like looking at Picard on the ship and saying engage, well, it reminded me of Tim Allen and Wild Hogs, you know, the old dude for one last trip on his, you know, on his bike, you know, going out one last road trip. That's what it felt like. Seeing Riker, I want to see what's going on with them. But, you know, it's almost like I just want to I want to put a book in on it, and I just want to see what they're doing. I don't know that I'm never necessarily going to like it. I just kind of have to see it. But I don't know what that is. I don't know if that's even good or healthy, but that's kind of where I'm at right now. So.
Masochist.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've got 9 more episodes to go, and if this is how we start off, it's going to be interesting.
It's only going to go down from here.
Oh, man.
So, yeah. Yeah. So
it's sad, too, being able to see that there are, it's like you said, DT, there are themes that are really interesting. So there's promise in there. It's just so poorly handled.
Yeah, to our listening audience, you can definitely check out Star Trek Picard if you want to. But if you're a Trek fan, if you're a Picard fan, okay, we wouldn't recommend it. Simple as that. All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Thanks for listening. I want to thank each one of my co-hosts. Thank you so much, Jeff.
You're welcome, sir, and beaming out.
Thank you so much, Steve.
Thank you. You know, we're here suffering through this so everyone else doesn't have to, and I hope that you got some entertainment out of our pain.
Thank you so much, Dave.
No problem, and I will be getting out of here soon because my self-destruct sequence on my computer has been activated. So.
All right, folks. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you next time on the next episode of Sloppy Spoilers.